Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, host of the program. I am joined by the corner contingent right across from me, my man, 100 grand, Mr. Bobby Rosa, is in the studio behind the board and in the screening room. Producer extraordinaire, often imitated, never duplicated, the real J Mac is in the screening room, and we are ready to rock and roll with today's edition of the program. So many things are happening today. Major things are happening. Huge deal struck between Israel and Hamas to release hostages. There are stages to the deal. It has to be ratified ultimately by Israel, its Security Council, and its Knesset. Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's communications department said they look to attempting to move that forward this evening. But that happened. News of that broke during the confirmation hearing for Marco Rubio, who has been nominated by President Trump to be his Secretary of State. You have Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi. Her hearing was today. The first of 2 days of hearings in her case transpired. In addition to that, I ain't going to say I told you so, but four people were arrested for arson in the Los Angeles area. I'm not saying that their actions caused the wildfires, but what I am saying is that all of these people that want to say climate change, they ignore some of the most immediate, realistic possibilities that could have contributed to what transpired there. And also, a recall effort is underway to recall Gabinetto Mussolini. All that and more. But with all of those things transpiring, none of them are more important than what goes on in your home. This is the program where we endeavor to remind you daily that what goes on in your house is far more important than what is going on in the White House. Of course, I want to be informed. I want you to be informed. But information should not move us away from what is primary. At this very moment, many of you are making your transition from your part-time jobs where you generate an income to your full-time jobs where you cultivate an outcome. And outcome cultivation is the order of the day. I want to begin the program, as is my custom, by turning to the word of God. I'm going to focus on the primary text in Ezra chapter 8, verses 21 through 23. I also will refer to another verse in that chapter, but I need to explain a little bit of the context of the book and the things that are transpiring there. I alluded to this yesterday, but Ezra, the book of Ezra, includes a bit of history before Ezra arrives, really, in his own book that details the return of Jewish exiles to Judah and Jerusalem. It provides a roster of the individuals, names, quantities, etc. Then it explains how, following the decree of the Persian king Cyrus in about 538 BC, the exiles were returned to Jerusalem and temple reconstruction got underway. Then, unsurprisingly, chapter 4 details adversaries that arose that sought to thwart the temple reconstruction effort and actually caused a 15-year hiatus between when the work was initiated and before its completion. Ezra records the prophetic work of people like Haggai and Zechariah was a source of encouragement, if not rebuke, to get the reconstruction, temple reconstruction work resumed. And the temple was finally completed at about 516 BC. Ezra arrives back in Jerusalem after the temple had already been reconstructed. He Ezra was a descendant of the high priestly lineage of Aaron. The book details that plainly. And Ezra's purpose in returning, having been received favor from King Artaxerxes at this juncture. And it's amazing how the events transpired. First, Cyrus issues his decree, even funds portions of the return. King Darius thereafter is appealed to by many of the people who are in the region saying, what are these people doing? King Darius searches the records, the Persian records, find out King Cyrus issued his decree, amplifies the decree, provides more resources. King Artaxerxes then continues in that trajectory, even ultimately issuing a proclamation that names Ezra specifically, says, you pray for me and pray for my sons and pray for my kingdom as you rebuild Yahweh's, well, not rebuild, reinstitute accurate Yahweh worship. That's what Ezra was returning to do. When Artaxerxes issued this proclamation for Ezra, he also provided massive amounts of revenue and even said that the royal treasury is supposed to be utilized to support the ministry of Yahweh worship in Jerusalem. King Artaxerxes even granted Ezra the authority to carry with him additional Jews to return to Jerusalem. And then we come to this point in chapter 8, verses 21 through 23, that we can miss if we speed through the book to where Ezra has a moment of transparency as he's navigating this. Look in Ezra chapter 8, verse 21. And this is what the word of God says. Then, this is Ezra speaking, then I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God to seek from him a safe journey for us, our little ones, and all our possessions. For I was ashamed to request from the king troops and horsemen to protect us from the enemy on the way. Because we had said to the king, the hand of our God is favorably disposed to all those who seek him. But his power and his anger are against all those who forsake him. So we fasted and sought our God concerning this matter, and he listened to our entreaty. What you have here, folks, is a moment of that our sovereign King in heaven has recorded for our benefit, because he knows that we who are his people, we are flesh and blood human beings. But that flesh and blood humanity is never a sufficient justification for us to absent ourselves from what God calls us to. And it's also a reminder for us to refuse to try to press forward in our own strength as if we are sufficient in and of ourselves. You look in this exact same chapter, verses, 26 through about 29, you can see King Artaxerxes literally loaded Ezra down with tons of silver and gold, not figuratively, literally tons of silver and gold for their journey. You continue reading in the book, the journey, because of the pace that they were traveling, as Ezra noted, that there are older people with him, younger people with them, children, and they have all of this gold and silver with them. Ezra, rightly so, declared to King Artaxerxes, this is the work of God. It is the will of God for me to return, the will of the true and living God for his people, the Hebraic people, to return to Jerusalem to worship him, for authentic Yahweh worship to be reinstituted. So much so, O king, that the hand of our God is upon us for this journey, and his hand is favorably disposed to all who seek him. And his power and his anger are against all those who forsake him. But something amazing happened. That's not crazy. Ezra started this journey. You have this cadre of people. The chapter, the verses preceding tell you several thousand people are traveling with Ezra. And he realizes, man, we out here with these people. We don't have any soldiers guarding us. We don't have any protection. We could be ambushed, robbed, murdered. And in a moment of transparency, says, man, and I was too embarrassed to ask the king for a military escort. I was too embarrassed to ask for escort because I'd already went out there and said, man, this God shall protect us. Have you ever had that experience? The Lord is leading you in a particular direction and you take the initial steps to respond to what the Lord is calling you to. And then you get out there on that proverbial water, so to speak, and you realize, I'm really, really, really out here. And then your mind begins to consider all of the negative things that could transpire, all of the many ways that this won't work, all of the many ways that this will fail, all of the many ways you'll be embarrassed, you'll be made a laughing stock, and all of these negative things. I want to tell you something. That consideration is not from the Lord. In fact, that type of stinking thinking is promulgated for one primary objective: to dislodge you from the one whom you profess to belong to. It's to cause you to, having begun this move, to make this initial move, filled with faith and confidence in the Lord, to get you to now doubt him. So much so to where you exchange confidence in him and reliance upon him for a turn to try to rely on the flesh. But what is Ezra's example for us? Ezra doesn't do that. When faced with that temptation, having the real consideration that I'm here, exposed, no military escort, with elders, with children, we really could be ambushed. He refuses to allow that consideration to drive him away from the Lord, to call in some humanistic resource. But what did he tell us? Verse 21, I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God and seek from him a safe journey for us, our little ones, and all our possessions. Look at verse 23. So we fasted and sought our God concerning this matter, and he listened to our entreaty. What I'm saying to brothers and sisters, when you make that move, when you take that initial step, we're all human beings. I know what that's like. Oh, man. I'm out here now. Unless the Lord makes a way, there ain't no way. Instead of allowing that consideration to drive you away from the Lord and confidence in him, Ezra has an example for us. Not everything in the scriptures provided for us as an example to follow. Some of the stuff the Lord includes for us to say, okay, you see what happened there. Don't do that. But that's not what this is. What this is an example for us to follow. When you step out and you're on that proverbial water, don't allow that to drive you away from the Lord. Let it drive you even the more to seek him. As Ezra said, we sought our Lord that he may provide safe passage for us. If you look at verse 31, it's amazing. Then we journeyed from the river Ahava, and on the 12th of the first month, to go to Jerusalem, and the hand of our God was over us, and he delivered us from the hand of the enemy and the ambushes by the way. See, this tells you Ezra's consideration was very, very real. Oh, yeah, there were people who would love to lighten his load of that gold and that silver and all of that, the funds that King Artaxerxes had provided for them. But instead of allowing the consideration of the realistic possibilities, it drove him even the more to seek an audience with the Lord, crying out to him, and to secure a safe passage from him. What I am saying is that we must seek the Lord to lead us to make the initial step, to encourage us and strengthen us to walk through the middle steps and the concluding steps, that we refuse to allow circumstances to drive a wedge between us and our reliance upon and confidence in the King of Glory. Because faithful is he who calls you, for he will surely do it. The Lord our God is a trustworthy Father, a trustworthy Lord, an all-sufficient Savior, and you will never regret putting your full weight down on him.
A Discipleship Minute with Joseph Parker.
In Exodus 1 is a wonderful story of two little midwives, Shiphrah and Puah, who Pharaoh told them, kill the baby boys when they're born. And they had it in their heart. They just knew this is wrong. And their perspective was, we're not going to do this because this is against God's will. And they refused to do it. What wonderful role models Shiphrah and Puah are, not only for pastors, but for every believer in every context, because it is always going to take courage to really follow Jesus accurately. And it's one of those things where I believe absolutely every believer should diligently say, Lord, show me what you want me to do to help end the slaughter of children in our country. And I believe God has something for every believer to do to help. The devil hates grown folks, and he hates children. The devil can't stand children, and he loves to abort them. So it's important for us to understand this is serious business.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner. Abraham Hamilton III here. We are in the middle of our preborn campaign this week. It ends on January 22nd. We've been talking at length about the fact that the largest, or should I say the leading cause of death in America and the world, frankly, is the slaughter of innocent unborn children. Preborn is an amazing ministry. An amazing ministry. And I would like to encourage you, invite you to join us as we come alongside them in serving pregnant moms who are abortion-minded by providing free ultrasounds to them. Now, clearly the ultrasounds aren't free. It just would be free to the moms who need them. $28 provides one ultrasound. $140 provides five ultrasounds. Whatever you can do would be greatly appreciated. You can make your gift by calling 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can go to AFR.net right on our homepage. You'll see a link where you can give securely online. This is a very, very, very important ministry that we do. I've explained that Preborn not only provides these ultrasounds, but they also serve the moms after they have their babies. The evidence shows that the overwhelming majority of moms, when they see their babies on the ultrasound, they keep the baby. And Preborn stays right beside them, not only to give life to the child, but to serve the mom, and even proclaiming the gospel to the mom, and involve family members in the process. Would you participate? Join us in this campaign to support Preborn. 877-616-2396, or you can call securely. You can go securely online at AFR.net to give. All right. One of the biggest things that happened today was the announcement of the deal between Israel and Hamas that was brokered by Qatar and the U.S. According to reports I've read, that the Qatar prime minister was present. I'm not speaking on the soundness of the deal, because when you get into the details, you start to realize, And of course, I don't know every single detail because I wasn't in the room. And I'm not Prime Minister Netanyahu or President Trump. But the deal was announced today in the middle of Senator Marco Rubio's confirmation hearing before the U.S. Senate. Listen to and watch clip number one concerning this deal. Clip number one.
This is breaking news right now. According to a source familiar with the ongoing talks, a ceasefire deal has been reached between Israel and Hamas. I do want to just read to you what this source just sent. Quote, Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal reached following the Qataris' meeting with Hamas negotiators for a final push following last-minute additions by the group. There were some reports that indicated Hamas officials were trying to push the Israelis to change their position about a key corridor that sits along the Gaza-Egypt border called the Philadelphia Corridor. Now, I am told that the Qatari prime minister himself was in the negotiating room and pushed these Hamas officials to accept the agreement on the table.
Now, this is very, 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 very interesting on a host of fronts. So, I want to describe several things. The first thing I want to describe is that the deal was announced on the U.S. side, and President Trump posted about it on Truth Social. Mr. Ice Cream Man, Master B, is already out taking credit for it. Him and Sheil shall never be president. And Stinkin' Blinken, you know, they're giving press conferences. But according to Prime Minister Netanyahu's office, the Israeli security cabinet has to vote on the terms of this deal first. Then there has to be a second vote in Israel's Knesset. If those two votes are affirmative in approving the deal, there also will be time for appeals against some of the details of the measure. Okay? Now, according to what I've read that the deal consists of, that the framework proposes three phases. Three phases. That's right. Isn't Hamas's headquarters in Qatar? Yep. At least that's where Hamas's top brass likes to hang out. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that interesting? The first phase of the deal that's been presented begins with a six-week ceasefire of hostilities between Israel and Hamas. And it calls for Hamas to release 33 hostages out of an estimated 94 hostages that they're still holding. The total number, 94 hostages, includes both those who are dead and alive. Now, with that, I already have a problem. You can't refer to people who are dead as hostages. And why? And maybe those in the know have an accurate number. I hope they have an accurate number as to how many of that 94 are alive versus those who are not. All right. The 33 hostages that are supposed to be released in this phase one of this purported deal of people who have been held since October 7th. Think about this, guys. That's 15 months and counting. Of the 33 hostages that are supposed to be released in this first phase of this deal, that's supposed to start as early as Sunday, the day before President Trump's inauguration. Isn't that interesting as well? Among these 33 hostages that are supposed to be released in phase one, it includes civilian women soldiers, children, the elderly, and the sick. Now, I think this is very interesting that this is happening just as yesterday we had the confirmation hearing for Pete Hegseth, and he was talking about why it's important to understand why we shouldn't overwhelm our ranks of infantry, ground soldiers, with women. Anybody want to double back to Pete Hegseth's questioning yesterday? This is supposed to be phase one, 33 hostages of the 94 that are supposedly still in Hamas custody. That includes dead, those that also already are dead, that they're holding the bodies of the deceased. According to what's been described, Israel is supposed to, at that point, after the 33 hostages are released, to begin to withdraw its military from the Gaza Strip. From what has been described as population centers. And I, you know, I'm torn on that. So on the one hand, everything should be done to get the hostages back. On the other hand, has Hamas been eliminated? Hamas had the audacity to insist on further withdrawal from even what's been described as the Philadelphia corridor, which is along the border area between Gaza and Egypt. Prime Minister Netanyahu, according to these reports, has said, we ain't going nowhere. We're staying right there. And Hamas apparently relented on that. During these 6 weeks, negotiators from Israel and Hamas are supposed to continue negotiating on the additional terms for what's been called phases 2 and 3. And the negotiation is also supposed to be mediated by the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar, with the objective of transitioning toward phase 2. Phase 2 is supposed to begin with an exchange of the remaining living hostages, which at this stage would include male Israeli soldiers and other men of military age that are supposed to be released. The quantity has not been released yet. And I should note for you that we still have Americans who are, according to the reports that I've seen, are still alive. One of them, including Eden Alexander, who's an American and Israeli citizen who was serving in the Israel Defense Forces, who was kidnapped on October 7th. After phase 2, phase 3 is supposed to begin, with Israeli forces withdrawing even the more from Gaza, and what's been described as a temporary ceasefire is supposed to become permanent, bringing the war to an end. Now, this is the framework. All I can tell you, because I cannot represent to you that what's been described as phases 2 and 3 are signed, sealed, delivered. All I can tell you is that Prime Minister Netanyahu has said that they're looking to approve what's been described as this deal to get the initial hostages released beginning Sunday. Now, I would also remind you that it was President Trump who's said ever since he was reelected that a deal had better get done no later than by my inauguration, if not sooner. Listen to him saying this and watch it. Clip number two. Go.
If those hostages aren't back, I don't want to hurt your negotiation. If they're not back by the time I get into office, all will break out in the Middle East.
Can you elaborate?
And it will not be good for Hamas, and it will not be good, frankly, for anyone. All will break out. I don't have to say anymore, but that's what it is. And they should have given them back a long time. They should have never taken them.
Now, I have all kinds of mixed feelings about this, and it's, you know, I hate the efforts to politicize things so much so people trying to rush who takes credit for what. I know I'm not in these rooms, but I have a problem with them releasing these people in phases. Why can't we secure a scenario to where all of the hostages are released right now? Israel didn't attack Hamas. Israel didn't attack Hamas. Hamas attacked Israel. So if you want to know,
well, how does Hamas know that Israel will actually back away if the
hostages are released? You know it because they wasn't shooting at you in the first place. Now, at the exact same time, I'm a husband, I'm a father. I would want to do anything to get my child back home. So I understand that. I hope what has been described as a framework is not the totality of what's happening. And that President Trump's involvement, and this is not my opinion, the Qatari prime minister has even come out saying what a benefit this gentleman who is President Trump's special envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, has been to these negotiations. Steve Witkoff was there in Qatar alongside the Biden administration. You say what you want. There was no framework of a deal announced until President Trump says, I got to have these people back by my inauguration, and his envoy is involved. We have no announcements of any deals until then. You do with that what you want. I'm not interested as much in who or who doesn't get credit. What I'm interested in is, one, I don't trust terrorists. That's one. One thing I've learned from history, even up to current history, the only thing that terrorists understand is force. And it is galling to me that we, the most potent superpower in the country, I'm sorry, in the world, we can have a scenario when these terrorists have our people as hostages and we can't get our people home. That's not the America that we should be, folks. And you can say whatever you want. You know, I'm not a mathematician. I was born at, might have been born at night, but it wasn't last night. And I'm just reporting to you what I have read and what I know. This three-phase phenomenon is what's been announced. I hope and pray that it's not that. This is what's been described. And I want peace. I don't want people murdered mercilessly. And especially, and let me say this differently. Because murder is the taking of innocent human life. Terrorists are not innocent. Okay? Terrorists are not innocent. I don't want innocent people losing lives. Terrorists receive their just reward when they are executed. I hope and pray that this is bigger and broader than what's been reported. And I hope President Trump holds true to his public statements, that what I said is that the people are back. I didn't say phase one, phase two, phase three. I said the people are back. And I pray that that is the case, man. Because it's sickening to me that these terrorists learn, hey, if I can kill, maim, rape, murder, and just keep a few hostage, then I can have the world become my oyster. I'm sick of that notion. Sick and tired of it.
Streaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we've removed the letters ing. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
And I got to tell you guys, Abraham Hamilton III here. This is the Hamilton Corner. The more I chew on this, I am not comfortable with this announced deal with Israel and Hamas. I am not comfortable with this. I am not comfortable with this. I am concerned that things are not as they're being represented. I'll just say it that way. And I pray that President Trump has wisdom, that the Lord would give him wisdom and insight to navigate this circumstance. My heart breaks for all of the family members I couldn't imagine not seeing my child since October 7th. I pray that the Lord would comfort these people. But the objective of Israel in response to the war included eliminating Hamas. I'm concerned that this is a last-ditch effort on the part of the terrorists to maintain some modicum of a foundation that would allow them to, like cockroaches, come out of the fog. I'm concerned about this. I'm greatly concerned about this. I have more to say on that in the coming days as more information is made available. Another story that I believe is very important concerning these fires on the West Coast in the Los Angeles area. I mentioned to you that all of these people in media outlets that are convenient, climate change, because it's a convenient excuse to take the attention away from land mismanagement, human agitation, and things like, arson. We learn, and I'm going to play a clip, it details two of the cases. But shortly before I came on the air, I got a report of four people who were arrested in four different portions, four different places, and four different instances for arson in Southern California. Listen to and watch clip number seven. Clip seven, go.
At approximately 5:15 p.m., officers responded to a radio call near the intersection of Glen Oaks and Van Nuys Boulevard, where a citizen had detained a possible arson suspect. Upon arrival, officers took the suspect into custody, and the citizen had already extinguished a nearby fire in a tree. During the investigation, the suspect admitted to starting the fire because he liked the smell of burning leaves. The suspect was subsequently booked for arson. Later that evening, at about 9:30 in the area of Santa Monica in Vermont, fire department personnel responded to reports of a suspect setting multiple piles of rubbish and trash on fire. Fire department quickly extinguished the fires and officers took the suspect into custody. Suspect admitted to setting multiple fires that day and stated that she enjoyed causing chaos and destruction. She was also booked for arson.
Now, I'm going to carry these because the story does it in reverse order, but I'm going to go in the opposite order of the report that I received, because it shows as far back as last Thursday, someone was arrested for arson. Isn't that interesting? Nobody mentioned that. Last Thursday, January 9th, residents of the Woodlands Hills neighborhood detained a man holding a blowtorch near the area of the Kenneth Fire. Police arrived and detained the man on suspicion of arson. This is not the one I wanted to start with, but I'll go this one. This was the bonus one, but I'll go with this one. Detained the man on suspicion of arson, but they lacked probable cause to arrest him on those charges. The suspect, 33-year-old Juan Manuel Sierra Leyva, though he was unable to be arrested for arson, he was identified as a Mexican national who entered the U.S. unlawfully and was detained on that basis. Last Wednesday, January 8th, a female suspect was arrested, and this was a part of the report, for starting a brush fire near Leo Carrillo State Park in Los Angeles County. The 60-year-old woman, Gloria Lynn Mandich, was booked into the Ventura County Jail and charged with felony arson. Last Friday, January 10th, around 11:37 p.m. local time, police were dispatched in response to a reported brush fire. A witness told officers on the scene that a person ignited the fire. This is in the Azusa area. The Azusa Police Department said in the statement, quote, officers located the adult male suspect identified as Jose Carranza Escobar standing next to the flames. According to police, Escobar admitted to starting the fire when they questioned him. On Sunday night, January 12th, residents of North Hollywood notified police of a possible arson suspect. Witnesses said the suspect used a barbecue lighter to spark fires, plural, in the area. Police arrested the suspect, who already had an outstanding felony warrant for, guess what? You guessed it, arson. He was booked in the Van Nuys jail. Of course, I would want to ask the question, is this guy an arsonist? Had he done this before? Witnesses say they saw him igniting multiple fires. Mm-hmm. Then Monday afternoon, January 13th, police responded to 911 calls regarding a possible arson suspect accused of setting a brush fire in the Los Angeles suburb of West Valley. This suspect was arrested and booked into the Van Nuys jail. Why am I saying all of this? I'm saying all of this because why are we getting reports of people starting fires now, but nobody said anything about that when the various fires were sparked? I said to you, climate change is not what's going on, but all over the media, that's what you're hearing. These are just four of the cases. Could there be more? Should, going out on a limb here, should the journalists ask, could any of this be attributed? Is there any evidence of arson being a contributing factor? You know why, folks? Because the climate Marxists don't want you asking these questions because they want their alarmist orthodoxy to be embraced by all. As another just interesting phenomenon, that a recall effort in light, or should I say in the wake of the tragic fires in California, to where now the death toll, the last report I saw, has at least 26 people. The fires have torched more than 40,000 acres. That's almost three times the size of Manhattan in Southern California. A recall effort is underway for Governor Gavinito Mussolini. Listen to and watch clip number three. Clip three, go.
California Governor Gavin Newsom is facing a growing recall effort amid sharp criticism over his handling of the devastating Los Angeles wildfires. Opponents are branding his leadership a series of catastrophic failures as fires scorch over 40,000 acres, destroy 12,000 structures, and claim at least 24 lives. Randy Economy, a recall organizer, blasted Newsom's woefully unprepared response, citing years of poor policies that have fueled crises like homelessness, high cost of living, and inadequate wildfire preparedness. Economy vowed to file formal papers in 2 weeks to kickstart the recall process, which requires 1.3 million signatures within 5 months. Dr. Human David Hamadi, another organizer, accused Newsom of failing to address California's wildfire issues despite over a decade in top leadership roles. Newsom, who survived a recall in 2021, dismissed the latest effort as politically motivated.
Which is always rich for me. Like, dude, you are a politician. Well, this is politically motivated. You being elected is politically motivated. You being governor is politically motivated. You are a politician. You know, I understand that that's distinct from criminally motivated, you know, or prosecutorially motivated if you committed a particular crime. But yeah, if the citizens of California don't want you as governor anymore, yeah, that's politically motivated, dude. Crazy. Also today, you had two Trump transition team cabinet confirmation hearings going on really at about the same time. Pam Bondi's hearing for her to be confirmed as the next Attorney General of the United States of America started first. Then Marco Rubio, currently Senator Marco Rubio's confirmation hearing for him to become the next Secretary of State started after Pam Bondi's. Pam Bondi is expected to have a second day of hearings tomorrow, but Senator Marco Rubio's hearing is done today. And then on to the Senate. It's obvious why President Trump was impressed with Marco Rubio. He does a great job in the hearings. He really does. Talk is one thing. Walk is another. But on the talk front, Marco Rubio does a pretty impressive job. Listen to, this is an excerpt from his opening statement. Listen to and watch clip number 4. This kind of gives you an idea of how Marco Rubio acquitted himself in his hearing today. Clip 4.
That led to the emergence of stability, democracy, and prosperity, but it also prevented a cataclysmic world war. And ultimately, a wall in Berlin came down, and with it, an evil empire. Out of the triumphalism of the end of the long Cold War emerged a bipartisan consensus. And this consensus was that we had reached the end of history, that all of the nations of the world would now become members of the democratic Western-led community, that a foreign policy that served the national interest could now be replaced by one that served the liberal world order, and that all mankind was now destined to abandon national sovereignty and national identity and would instead become one human family and citizens of the world. This wasn't just a fantasy. We now know it was a dangerous delusion. Here in America and in many of the advanced economies across the world, an almost religious commitment to free and unfettered trade at the expense of our national economy, shrunk the middle class, left the working class in crisis, collapsed our industrial capacity, and has pushed critical supply chains into the hands of adversaries and of rivals. An irrational zeal for maximum freedom of movement of people has resulted in a historic mass migration crisis here in America, but also around the world. It's one that threatens the stability of societies and of governments. Across the West, governments now censor and even prosecute domestic political opponents. Meanwhile, radical jihadists openly march in the streets and sadly drive vehicles into our people.
And sadly drive vehicles into our people. Marco Rubio did a good job in his hearing. I expect he will be confirmed with no problem. I mean, it was even some of the Democrat senators were fawning over him. He's such an amazing thing, which always I'm just like, Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi did an amazing job. She's going to be confirmed with flying colors as well. I don't have time to get to all of her remarks because most of the questions to her really had nothing to do with her. They were asking her about Cash Patel and other things. And, man, they are scared of Cash Patel. And they were asking about her advice on pardons. But I'll give you, I try to get this last one in where she took Adam Schiff to task. And I think this is worth your attention. Clip 6. Go.
It will also be important that you give good advice to the president. Are you prepared to advise the president not to pardon people who beat police officers?
Senator, as I said, the pardons are at the direction of the president. We will look and we will advise. I will look at every case on a case.
Okay, so
let me finish. On a case by case basis.
Okay, good.
I abhor violence to police officers.
Follow up with that. So will it be your advice to the president? Mr. President, I know you said you want to issue hundreds of pardons on day one. Will it be your advice to the president? No, Mr. President, I need to go over them on a case-by-case basis. Do not issue blanket pardons. Will that be your advice to the president?
Senator, I have not looked at any of those files. If confirmed, I will look at the files
and
for the pardons
as well as the
ongoing
investigation. Will you be able to review hundreds of cases on day one?
Oh, I wish I could get y'all the rest. Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.